Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
My name is Georgios Tsetis. I'm the co-founder of Nutrafol.
My hair started thinning in my early 20s. I tried everything and nothing was really working. So we created Nutrafol. Our hair growth supplements undergo clinical trials and have helped millions of men and women get visibly thicker and stronger hair in just 3 to 6 months.
Hair growth starts from the inside at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com.
Effectual Data Creation Facility Production.
Welcome to the OFNT Podcast, episode 260, which I'm calling In Like a Lion, as in March comes in like one, but leaves like a lamb. Well, hopefully. Yeah, it's been windy lately, but at least the temperature stays above freezing all day and night. Well, in this episode, I have some MWC news and a bit of Apple news. And also, Apple Plus has a new show I'm liking, some new non-Apple tech I've been fooling around with, and a little bit of podcast news. So, from the eastern Tennessee Appalachian Mountains, where we're still waiting for a conversational Siri, it's the OFNT Podcast.
Yes! Yes!
Tech news. Old Tim Apple is under fire from his board of directors for what the press is calling the botched launch of Apple Intelligence. The giant fruit company even had to pull its advertisements for its new, improved, enhanced digital assistant. Hey, wasn't Apple Intelligence the main reason for buying the iPhone 16?
Yes.
Well, that's what Apple was telling everybody. Well, looks like Amazon might beat Apple to the punch after all. I'm hearing that one of Apple's major stockholders even called for Tim Cook's resignation.
Wow!
It's about time he started looking towards retirement anyway, in my opinion. I feel that Apple rushed Apple Intelligence out because they were under pressure from their competitors and didn't want to appear to be falling behind. What the company should have done is what they used to do, and that is just ignore major tech developments until they can perfect them before putting them into their products. Long ago, I predicted that Apple Intelligence would be the operating system itself. And that's what I thought we'd be getting when Apple finally released their version of AI.
No, dear, that's wrong.
I know, Internet Lady. I know. Here's some good news. At least if, like myself, you reside within the walled garden, better known as the Apple ecosystem. 9to5Mac.com has an article which says end-to-end encryption is coming to RCS text messaging for iOS devices.
Yay!
The GSM Association, which regulates text and RCS standards, announced RCS Profile 3.0, which adds end-to-end encryption, no doubt based on Google's previously released encryption standard, which, if I'm recalling correctly, the Big G submitted to the GSM Association sometime last year. We all should thank Google for pushing RCS and an encryption standard to go along with it. If it weren't for them, RCS would still be languishing. As you probably already know, RCS, which stands for Rich Communication Services, has many of the features that Apple's own iMessage has, which caused Apple to see RCS as a threat to iMessages, and we can't have that. The EU threatened Apple to adopt RCS, who showed no interest in adopting the standard previously. To avoid the hassle and expense of legal action, of which the company would have most likely lost, Apple included RCS support within iOS 18 last fall. The only problem I have with Apple's RCS implementation is while you can send and receive RCS messages on your iPhone, You can't start an RCS message on an iPad or Mac at the present time. You can receive an RCS message on these devices, as long as they're linked to your phone, but I'm not sure if you can reply using those devices. And if you do reply, will it be an RCS message? I believe that it will go out as a plain text message. Well, I hope Apple will be addressing this in the future. This next story from AppleInsider.com talks about another feature that Google has for its own branded earbuds that's now coming to Apple AirPods, and that's live language translation. I confess to not keeping up with Android as much as I should these days, but I recall this feature being kind of hokey when Google first released it for their Pixel Buds. If true, this feature comes a little too late for me. I could have really used it during my working days. Oh well. Supposedly, this live language translation feature will arrive with iOS 19 this fall, though the article didn't state what model or models of AirPods it's coming to. Most likely the AirPods Pro version 2 and the upcoming version 3, which are estimated to be launching with or soon after the iPhone 17 and iOS 19. Because of Apple's historically slow rollout of different languages for their products, though, it'll probably take years for this to become truly useful to the world traveler. The delay of Apple Intelligence-infused Siri has also caused a delay in the release of the Smart Home Hub, also known as the HomePod with a display. I'm not really interested in this product anyway. My Smart Home Hub is run through my security system, and I wouldn't want to mess with that.
No.
Also, the price of this screened HomePod will be too high for my taste, with estimates of the price approaching $1,000.
What? Whoa!
MacRumors.com quotes supply chain analyst Supreme, none other than Mr. Ming-Chi Kuo, as saying this home hub product will go into mass production in the third quarter of this year. Well, if it's business quarter he's referring to, that means this upcoming June. That jives with the enhanced Siri release in October. Supposedly, this home hub will have a 7-inch display and be powered by the A18 chip. The screen can be mounted on a tabletop base or hung on a wall. Are you even remotely interested in this product? Well, if so, I got a set of Vision Pros you might be interested in purchasing from me. And no, not really. A while back, luxury speaker manufacturer Sonos announced that they would be releasing a television streaming box to compete with the Apple TV 4K. The streaming box would run Android.
What?
Which I'm sure would be considered heresy by some Apple enthusiasts, but the estimated price of $400 of your hard-earned money is what sent heads spinning when this product was first announced. According to TheVerge.com, Sonos has wisely abandoned the project. Even the most diehard Sonos fans, and there are some out there, would have a hard time coughing up that kind of money for an Android-powered streaming box, no matter how well integrated with their other Sonos gear. The thinking behind this product was probably that many consumers owned Sonos speakers and soundbars, and that this expensive box would provide better compatibility with them. I'm also sure a select number of these Sonos owners were contacted asking for their opinion on it. I'd wager a lot of them gave a hard no as an answer. Why would one who was in the Apple ecosystem choose this streaming box over a cheaper Apple TV box, which is integrated seamlessly within iOS and macOS? I guess only their hairdressers would know. In my opinion, Sonos products cost too much for what they offer. For example, I looked at Sonos soundbars for my television and compared them with the competitors' products. While the Sonos soundbars sounded better, it didn't sound two times the amount of money better. The company's entry-level soundbar cost $400. I purchased an LG-branded soundbar, which came with an external subwoofer, for a little over $250. This year's Mobile World Congress, better known as the MWC, was held a couple of weeks ago, and I must admit, it kind of snuck by me. Gone are the days of major announcements from smartphone companies like Nokia and HTC. And those two companies are, for all practical purposes, also gone. Now we get mostly AI-related stuff and minor announcements from major established brands. It's all sad. Anyway, AndroidAuthority.com had a rundown of what that website considered to be the biggest announcements from this year's MWC. Bleakwup Ranger are AI glasses made for the sport of cycling. In other words, a niche product. They feature a built-in camera capable of continuously recording for an hour, which can be extended to up to 5 hours via an optional helmet-mounted battery. A built-in gyroscope can detect when a rider slows down or experiences a potential crash, and automatically saving footage to the camera's 32 gigabytes of onboard storage. The AI can generate highlight reels from recorded rides, capturing what it deems as the most significant moments of it. The glasses also have integrated speakers, which allow music playback via Spotify, using touch gestures for control. So what we basically have here is an AI-assisted camera with music capability. All I can say is good luck with that, bros. Next, we have the Realme company showing a phone that lets you attach full-size DSLR lenses to it, as long as those lenses are from Leica Corporation. If you can afford a Leica lens, then you might as well just use a Leica camera body, in my opinion. Now, if this phone accepted Canon or Nikon lenses, then maybe this concept would have a shot. Get it? A shot, as in camera. You know, camera shot?
Yes?
No.
Never mind. I guess Realme couldn't land licenses from Canon or Nikon, but Leica, despite their haughty-taughty reputation, seems willing to license any of their products these days. Chinese film company Honor, which is a spin-off from Huawei, wink wink, yeah, right, has joined the 7-year club of software updates. Samsung and Google have previously announced at least 6 years of updates for their phones. While this is a good thing, if we're being real here, by the time 5 years rolls around, you won't be getting a full Android update going forward. And I'm being generous with my estimation. Honor also debuted an 11.5-inch tablet, which features a 2.8K display and refreshes at a whopping 144Hz. And here we have Apple just releasing a new iPad Air whose display is still stuck at 60Hz refresh rate. Go figure. The tablet is crafted from aluminum, and at around $450, this is a great deal, though, judging by pictures of it, design-wise, it's about two generations behind the iPad Air. Still a good bargain, though. HMD showed off its Fusion X1 smartphone, designed with teen safety in mind. The Companion Explorer app allows parents to manage internet access, limit social media, browsing and screen time, manage contact lists, etc., etc. Basically spyware for your kid's phone. I guess parents can wager how long it takes their kids to get around those safeguards. In order to use the Explorer app, you'll be forking over around $6 per month for the subscription price. Explorer is also available as a separate app for Android and iOS. What would stop you from putting the Explorer app on a spouse's phone, for example, so you can spy on them?
I don't know, mate.
Carl Pays Nothing released its Phone 3A and Phone 3A Pro at MWC, with the Pro featuring a periscope-style zoom lens for the price of $459.
Wow.
Until now, an unheard-of feature at this price point. Both models have a 6.77-inch AMOLED display with 300 nits of peak brightness and 120Hz refresh rates. Nice package for the price. No wireless charging capability, though.
Aww.
Not to be outdone, Samsung introduced the A26, A36, and A56 series of smartphones. The prices run from $299 to $499 for these phones. The main differences of the models are cameras and chipsets. The more you pay, the better the specs are. The remainder of the list are mainly concepts, and if you follow CES, then you know that a lot, well, most of these concept products never enter production, so I won't bother covering them here. I guess that's what MWC has become, the European equivalent of CES. Tech I'm using. In the last episode, I hinted at some non-Apple tech I've been messing around with. Well, I'm the proud owner of a Zoom H1 Essential Handy Recorder, which nicely complements my older Zoom H1N Handy Recorder. I picked up the H1 Essential when it was on sale from Amazon during Black Friday last year. That coincided with my location change. It kind of got lost in the shuffle. The biggest difference between it and the model it replaced is that the new H1 features 32-bit float audio recording. Now, I'm not going to get into the specifics of 32-bit audio, but the advantage of it is that your recorded audio won't clip and there's no need for setting a recording level. I have a very serviceable, if low-cost, set of wired lav mics that I've used with the older H1N, which work quite well. I had planned to use them with the newer recorder, that is, until the algorithm on YouTube served me up a video review of wireless lav mics from a company called Hollyland. The company's new model, the Lark M2S, are smaller and cheaper than the older Lark M2, while delivering about the same quality sound. I say about the same quality because in a comparison test I listened to, the plain M2s did sound better. Another advantage of the new M2S model is that it is of the clip-on style versus the magnet style of the M2. Curious, I looked up the M2Ss on Amazon and saw that the price was indeed reasonable, so I placed them on my wish list. I then perused the reviews of them on Amazon, and one of these reviews gave me pause. The basic model of these wireless lav mics comes with two mics, a USB-C transmitter for your phone, and a TRS-cabled camera-mounted transmitter. All fit in a small charging case. This reviewer connected the camera transmitter to his Zoom H1 Essential via a TRS cable and used his wireless lav mics with it. I figured that if it worked with the Zoom, well, it would work with my Luit Connect 6 audio interface.
Wrong.
And then retreated into my 24-hour tech purchase cooling off period, which I described last episode, and forgot about the whole thing. A couple of days later, I received a notification from Amazon telling me that the Hollyland M2S was now on sale. Of course, I placed my order, and in 3 days, they were delivered. The build quality was very good, which surprised me. I tested them out on the H1 Essential Handy Recorder using the method described by the reviewer, and they worked like a charm. Then I tried using them with the Luit, but I received no joy. I tried both the USB-C transmitter and the camera mount transmitter, but I couldn't get either to work. I'll continue messing around with them next week. Here are some audio samples for your listening pleasure. First up, the Zoom H1 Essential on its own.
This is a test of the Zoom H1 Essential Handy Recorder using its built-in mics.
Yeah, a lot of plosives on that one. Now here's the H1 Essential with a cat hair pop filter attached.
This is a test of the Zoom H1 Essential Handy Recorder with a proper pop filter in place.
Yeah, that pop filter did its job. Sounded much cleaner, much better. And finally, the H1 Essential with the Hollyland lav mic.
This is a test of the Zoom H1 Recorder with the Hollyland M2S lav mic. Testing 1, 2, 3. Testing 1, 2, 3. Mic check out.
Not bad, I think. I did put a little bit of processing on the samples to clean them up some. How do you think they sound? The old H1N will find a home in my automobile, so I'll always have an audio recorder on hand. I plan on using the H1 Essential mainly for recording Foley sounds.
Location, the lab. Quentin only has 24 hours to sell his car. Is that even possible? He goes to Carvana.com.
What is this, a movie trailer?
He ignores the doubters, enters his license plate. Wow, that's a great offer. The car is sold, but will Carvana pick it up in time for...
They'll literally pick it up tomorrow morning. Done with the dramatics?
Car selling in record time.
Save your time. Go to Carvana.com and sell your car today. Pickup fees may apply.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Entertainment news. If you're a regular listener of the OFNT podcast, you may remember me telling you about canceled former shock jock Anthony Cumia returning to broadcast radio, and that after spending over 11 years in exile. I listened to his inaugural episode last Sunday night. Well, you could tell he was a bit nervous, but he did well. If you've ever listened or watched his show when he helmed his own media company or his current gig on Compound Censored, then you got pretty much the same thing on his radio show. I think this week he has a guest, his old friend comedian Jim Norton. What wasn't anticipated was his new show getting syndicated almost immediately after that first show. Now this has got to be some sort of record. Both thought he would be eventually syndicated, but no one predicted it would happen so fast. Mr. Cumia aspires to eventually occupy the midday drive slot on the station. We'll have to wait and see if Mr. Cumia's baggage catches up with him, though. He's already gotten some bad press from the usual suspects, but that was expected. He's a talented broadcaster, so I think he'll be okay. I'm really impressed with the WABC streaming app, which is available in over 170 countries, and that's according to them. It's solid and intuitive, and also has a FM feed, which has much better audio than the regular medium wave feed has. The only other thing I have for you this week in regards to entertainment is a new series on Apple TV Plus called Dope Thief. The first two episodes dropped last week. I watched them and was very entertained. The series follows a couple of guys who make their living impersonating drug enforcement agents in order to rob drug dealers. The writing is solid as well as the acting. It takes place in Philadelphia and captures the grittiness of that city well. The plot is sort of complex, but at the same time easy to follow. I highly recommend Dope Thief. Podcast news. Well, former First Lady Michelle Obama, along with her brother, have launched a podcast. The first episode received about 70,000 views, which for most podcasters would be outstanding. But Ms. Obama has multi-millions of followers on X and Instagram, and they don't seem to have followed her over to her new podcast. Well, not many of them as expected. The show itself isn't very entertaining. I mean, it's not bad, but it won't appeal to younger audiences, which I assume is the target for this podcast. But after her failed Spotify podcast, which wasn't renewed after its first season, makes people wonder why she's back behind the mic. One of the theories is she's striking out on her own because her and former President Barack Obama are getting a divorce. The other one is she's staying in the public's eye while gearing up for a presidential run in 2028. Who knows, but the content of her first episode points to her just wanting to do a podcast. So far, it hasn't been very political, which is a good thing. I think the Obamas have lost some of their sparkle and aren't as popular or influential as they once were. WNYC, a public radio station which serves New York City, hence the call sign, is again laying off workers as listeners fall off and the station failed in its pivot to digital. Now, this can be blamed on a few things. WNYC went big into podcasting, as did most of so-called public radio, but being that they're funded by the government, NGOs using government money, grants from businesses, and listeners, they produce these podcasts like they produce their radio shows, i.e. recording in broadcast studios, complete with full staffs. These podcasts mainly centered around niche subjects most listeners didn't care about, and most of these podcasts were eventually abandoned. When this failed, they hired what's called a digital media executive, who had no experience working in radio. The station bought the Gothamist website and hired a room full of reporters to man it. You know, it's nice spending other people's money, isn't it?
Yes.
Keep in mind that executives at WNYC Public Radio pull in $500,000 per year and up in salary. When the Gotham has failed to attract many views, a truckload of money was spent on a redesign of the website, which, you guessed it, didn't have any effect. The overpaid and underperforming news staff of the Gothamists were mostly let go. Now the broadcast radio reporters are tasked with writing digital-type content on top of their normal radio content with the priority on digital content. Besides this, it appears not many people that fill the ranks of management at WNYC have any experience with either digital or broadcast media. I'm sure the situation at WNYC applies in various degrees across the whole of public radio. They're not helped by the very hard left turn these stations took just starting in the early 2000s, which lost National Public Radio probably around half its potential audience. It's all a darn shame. I used to listen to some of the podcasts put out by WNYC while at work, one being the Here's the Thing podcast, which was hosted, well, still is, hosted by Alec Baldwin.
What?
This was way before the movie set shooting scandal. Mr. Baldwin still does this podcast, but left WNYC for iHeartRadio. One thing I can give WNYC credit for is the audio sounded better when Mr. Baldwin recorded using the station studio. I guess taxpayer funds were used to good advantage there. I think the podcast is now recorded from Mr. Baldwin's luxury apartment in New York, now with his guests calling in remotely. Because of the out-of-control spending and garbage content NPR puts out, I'm all for defunding public radio. Detractors will tell you that only 1% of NPR's funding actually comes from the taxpayer, but that's not really true. NGOs, which get their funds from taxpayers, kick a bunch of cash NPR's way. I recently saw a breakdown, and it estimated that 50% or more of funding for NPR comes from taxpayer money. When you add in the NGOs anyway. Besides, if NPR really received just 1% of its funding from the government, why are they and their supporters yelling so loud about a possible cut in government funding? In my opinion, public radio is outdated. There are a myriad of ways to obtain information these days. Heck, even a podcaster sitting in his basement can provide just as much info without a tenth of the resources that NPR has at its disposal. And all the while unbiased about it. NPR has become nothing more than a repository of elite Ivy League J-School graduates that couldn't make it into corporate media. When's the last time you heard of NPR breaking any story either locally, nationally, or internationally? My question is, where's all the money going?
I don't know.
Unfortunately, neither do we. From an article which appeared on the podnews.net website, podcast hosting service company Transistor took a survey of Gen Z podcast fans, Gen Z being 13 to 28-year-olds, and found that this age group prefers audio-only podcasts, which I define as real podcasts. Some 76% of Gen Z respondents primarily listen to audio podcasts, while 18% consume a mix of audio and video podcasts. And just 6% primarily watch video podcasts. This certainly goes against the current industry push. Video my foot, I say. You see, the kids do get it.
Oh, yes.
Spotify is the most used app for listening to podcasts amongst Gen Z listeners, with 56% using it. I can see this. Well, I don't agree with some of Spotify's antics. It is the premier app for all things audio. Their music recommendations and catalog can't be beat. Of course, lately, Spotify wants to become the top dog in video, too. YouTube got 21%, while Apple only managed to garner 10% of respondents. Well, these results match last year's survey conducted by Edison Research. I find this all pretty interesting. I'm back using the tried-and-true Electro Voice RE20 microphone for the podcast. That's after using the Neumann TLM-102 for a couple episodes. This despite Neumann's reputation. Perhaps my mic technique needs improving. However, I've heard that the RE20, which I bought thinking was made in the good old USA, is now manufactured in Mexico.
What?
Upon attempting to research this, I learned that since being acquired back in 2003 by Bosch, Electro Voice have closed the factories where their microphones were manufactured in this country. Upon checking my microphone, nowhere does it say where it's made. This disappoints me, and you know, I'm beginning to see the benefits that tariffs that are being imposed by you-know-who
I beat China all the time
might be in bringing back some manufacturing jobs to this country. The only microphone that I know for a fact is made in the USA currently is the Heil PR40. Now, I'm not saying that a microphone made outside of the U.S. isn't good. It's just that I thought the RE20 was made domestically. No wonder the price of the RE20 went slightly down lately. You know, I wouldn't mind paying a little more for a domestically manufactured microphone. I mean, Neumann mics are still manufactured in Germany, and the UK has its Aston brand. You know, I might just pick up a Heil PR40.
Uh-oh.
The music is playing on this chilly evening here in the foothills of Tennessee, and it's time to say goodnight. Hope you enjoyed this episode. I enjoyed making it for you. If you like what you heard, you can make a donation using the link in the show notes. Any and all donations will be appreciated. You can always reach me at ofntpodcast@gmail.com, and that's if you're so inclined. I'd enjoy hearing from you. Remember, don't listen to what they say. Watch what they do. You're making a mess of what little property I have, so get off my lawn. Stay skeptical. I'm out. See ya.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty, self-doubt, stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live laugh lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.